Greetings, listeners and friends of RAOTC. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, saying welcome to this broadcast for July 2020. I am Bruce, VK3UV, and the major part of this bulletin is being recorded mid-June 2020. We are still in containment with the coronavirus, but most states are starting to ease restrictions, so hopefully our clubs can reopen soon and we can have face-to-face contacts. But until all restrictions are removed, please remember to keep safe distancing at all times. Now, I would like to thank all of our volunteers who have helped with relaying of this broadcast. This broadcast is relayed on a number of frequencies on the first Monday of the month, except for January. The transmissions emanate from many different sources, and the actual times and frequencies may be found on our website, www.raotc.org.au. We are continuing transmissions on Australia-wide VKDMR network on Talk Group 5 at 1100 hours VK3 time. And now we are also transmitting on D-Star on the Wednesday evening following the official broadcast on Reflector 91C at 7:30pm VK3 time. The morning primary HF broadcasts originate from Melbourne on 160, 40 and 20 metres, as has been the practice since these broadcasts started. But with the current poor HF conditions and sometimes a lack of volunteers, the HF system has been a challenge to say the least. And last month was a typical example where we had no 40 or 20 metre transmissions from VK3. This was due to equipment issues by our volunteers and we had no backup. So we again ask members in all states, if you can spare half an hour once a month to assist us with these relays, particularly on HF, to contact me. We invite local club repeater operators to relay this broadcast to your local provincial areas. Again, if you can assist with either of these requests, please contact me via our website, www.raotc.org.au, or email me, vk3uv, at wia.org.au. Club News. In May, the RAOTC had its quarterly meeting, but this time it was held by Skype video conferencing, which was very successful. Agenda items included the usual reports in all departments, and I am pleased to report that our financials are in very good shape, with thanks to our treasurer, Mike Good, VK3 BDL. And our membership levels are constant at around 480. One major item on the agenda was notice given by our secretary, Bill Roper, VK3 BR, who expressed a desire to stand down from those duties due to ongoing health issues. In this respect, I am pleased to announce that Ian Godsall, VK3JS, has offered to rejoin the committee and take over the administrative secretarial role of the RAOTC, and Bill Roper will continue to maintain the membership database for the time being, as well as editor of our OTN magazine. Ian's appointment as Administrative Secretary has now been formally ratified, and on behalf of the committee, I say welcome back, Ian. As most of you know, Ian has also been a major part of the broadcast production team for many years, and he will continue in that role as well, and later we will hear from Ian when he presents a pre-recorded article. Here now is our members' news. And we welcome Ross Bonney, VK7WP. He became full RAOTC member number 1787 on the 2nd of June 2020. And now it is my sad duty to report a silent key. We have been advised that Doug Charlton, VK7DK, RAOTC member number 1050, became a silent key on the 6th of January 2020, at the age of 92. Let us pause for a few moments in memory of our departed colleague. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Alzheimer's Club of Australia. Now, here is Ian to present something a bit different, and which affects a lot of us, particularly as we get older. Loneliness. Thanks, Ian.
Here's an article from Andrew Masterson, an author and journalist based in Melbourne. Multiple recent studies have found that loneliness is set to reach epidemic proportions through the Western world by 2030. Now, one of the most prominent researchers in the field suggests that it will soon outstrip obesity as a public health crisis. Julianne Holt-Lundstad of Brigham Young University in Utah, United States, prepared new research to present to the 125th Annual Convention of the American Psychological Association held in Washington, D.C. late last year. The work was based on a combination of two meta-analyses. The first involved 148 studies covering 300,000 people and found that social connectedness to family or community reduced the risk of all-cause mortality by 50%. The analysis also incorporated a further 70 studies covering 3.4 million people from North America, Australia and Europe. These studies looked at the health outcomes of people subject to social isolation, loneliness, or living alone. They concluded that all three conditions, individually or in combination, increased the risk of premature death. The risk escalation was in each study earlier equal to or greater than the risk posed by obesity. Quote, being connected to others socially is widely considered a fundamental human need, end of quote, says Holt-Lundstad. Continuing the quote, it is crucial to both well-being and survival. Extreme examples show infants in custodial care who lack human contact fail to thrive and often die, and indeed, social isolation or solitary confinement has been used as a form of punishment. End of quote. In 2015, Holt-Lundstad published a pioneering study into the health effects of loneliness. That study, in the journal Perspectives on Psychological Science, was also a meta-analysis, found that social isolation, loneliness, or living alone increased the risk of premature death by, respectively, 29%, 26%, and 32%. The study helped to change the focus from a lot of earlier research, which had tended to see loneliness as the product of some other condition, such as depression or poverty. One of the primary challenges for researchers in the field is that loneliness and social isolation have high individualistic experiences. So, a rigorous definition of the condition is difficult. Attempts to refine it by using a checklist approach have produced often distorted results. Loneliness is a subjective experience, said social work professor Dr. Mark Hughes from Southern Cross University in Queensland. It's the feeling that you don't have sufficient social connections. It's an internal, emotional response to your life situation. I think measures will always be based on self-reporting of the experience of loneliness, he says. Levels and degrees of experience are thus elusive, although the broad picture that loneliness is increasing and its public health implications are serious are largely undisputed. In 2016, the Australian crisis help organisation Lifeline released the results of its own survey into loneliness. It reported that as many as 80% of respondents said they had experienced significant periods of loneliness. Perhaps significantly, 60% of respondents who said they often felt lonely lived with a partner, and many of them with children. This apparently counterintuitive finding accords with research published in 2009, which found levels of loneliness were higher in societies that were traditionally family-oriented compared to those where individualism and independence were seen as desirable virtues. Although results vary, most studies into the public health implications of loneliness have reported that the risk of isolation increases with age. Holt Lundstedt warns that older people continue to constitute a growing proportion of the population, the situation is set to worsen. Quote, with an increasing population, the effect on public health is only anticipated to increase, she says. Indeed, many nations around the world now suggest we are facing a loneliness epidemic. The challenge we face now is what can be done about it. End of quote.
This is the K3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Alzheimer's Club of Australia. Here is another article from our history. The story of Alan Vague, VK3AGV, who, in 1937, communicated with Amelia Earhart on her fateful final journey from Papua New Guinea. This item appeared in OTN magazine number 9 of September 1992, and which was reprinted from the original article from the Melbourne Herald Sun of March 1992. And it is headed, Signals from a Clouded Past. Alan Vague, a young telegraphist, he regarded having Morse code exchanges with Amelia Earhart as just another job. Alan Vague believes he was one of the last two people to have contact with Amelia Earhart on her ill-fated around-the-world flight. But at the time, working as a telegraphist in what is now Papua New Guinea, he regarded having Morse code exchanges with the renowned aviatrix as just another job. Amelia Earhart disappeared after leaving Ley on the July the 2nd, 1937, with navigator Frank Noonan en route to Howland Island. It was the final leg of the trip, which had begun a month before. Speculation over their fate has raged ever since, and was renewed this week when the International Group for Historical Aircraft Recovery produced a piece of aluminium and a size 9 shoe, which it claimed came from the plane. The metal and shoe were found at Nikimaruroro Island, 560 kilometres from Howland. And the group's executive director, Richard Gillespie, said the evidence proved Earhart and Noonan had died on Nikimaruroro. For 55 years, her fate has been a mystery. Today, that mystery is solved. The Amelia Earhart case is closed. But others remain sceptical, saying there are no markings to prove the metal came from Earhart's plane. Mr. Vague, of Elwood, has heard all the theories and is certain of only one thing, that Earhart crashed somewhere in the Pacific. Yesterday he recalled how he and the officer in charge at Ley, Harry Balfour, took turns monitoring signals from the plane. They were strong throughout the day, advising that Earhart was on course. But they grew fainter, and at 6 p.m., the final signal was received, saying, 7,500 feet, heavy cloud, we were going underneath. Alan believes Earhart simply lost her way. On a long distance course like that, just a fraction of a degree and you'd miss it. Hopes to return to Nikimararoa next year to search for more artifacts and the rest of the plain. It has already excavated a grave on the island, hoping to find the remains of Earhart and Noonan, but finding only the bones of a child. And that article was reproduced from OTN of September 1992. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Alzheimer's Club of Australia.
Earlier this year, Bruce gave us an article about the history of the sinking of Titanic. This article was extremely well received, and we thank you all for your comments at the time. As I've been looking back through the archives of OTN Journal, I found a short article which would perhaps implement some of what Bruce was saying in his article. It's on page 16, and it's entitled A History of SOS. During World War II in 1940, dispatches from the war zone reported that SSSS was rivaling SOS as the maritime operator's call of distress. If it was fact at the time, the former was not internationally recognised as the SOS signal in the International Morse Code. In any event, the SSSS did not officially mean submarine sighted or any other words beginning with S. The explanation was that the ... four times repeated, representing these letters, has a characteristic swing and, through common understanding and usage, identified the nature of the distress case. SOS does not mean literally save our souls or save our ship, as is sometimes claimed, and more than a previous international distress call, CQD, meant come quick danger. All such calls are based on the speed and clarity with which they can be transmitted. There was no special wireless call for sea emergency prior to the turn of the century, according to the Federal Communication Records. About that time, the Marconi International Marine Company Limited began equipping ships for radio telegraph communication. In doing so, it adopted CQ, which had been in use in wire telegraph as a general call for many years, as a precedent signal for any ship desiring to communicate with another ship or shore station. The need for a common distress call was recognised at the preliminary international radio conference held at Berlin in 1903. Here the Italian delegation suggested that in emergency, a ship should send at intervals the signal SSSDDD. No action was taken at this conference. In 1904, the British Marconi Company instructed its ship radio operators to substitute CD for CQ. Subsequently, the D was substituted in the old CQ call. At the 1906 International Radio Conference at Berlin, however, SOS was formally adopted. This combination was the outgrowth of SOE, which had been used by German ships, but which was somewhat unsatisfactory because the final dot was easily obliterated by interference. Even so, CQD was firmly established with some operators that its use continued for some years thereafter. A notable example was its employment in summoning aid for the steamship Republic in 1909. CQD finally passed from the sea calls when the International Conference continued to approve SOS.
Here is a short article which was published in OTN number 6 of February 1990, and it tells a story of Bob Cunningham, VK3 LML. It was written by Jim Linton, VK3 PC, who is also a Silent Key. Very outgoing, hard-working, kind-hearted, known as a gentleman by all. These words describe Bob Cunningham, VK3 ML, who suffered ill health for some years and passed away at his Malvern home on the 31st of March 1989. Bob was first licensed in 1928 and a good DX man. His early WIA activities included being contest manager and technical editor for Amateur Radio magazine. His peers described him as a specialist leader who took on tasks and did them well. This description typified Bob's involvement in our hobby for 60 years. The WIA, before World War II, had tried to interest the armed services in forming a wireless reserve, with radio amateurs being its members. The idea was rejected by the Army and the Navy, but adopted by the Air Force. An RAAF Wireless Reserve was formed around 1931 at the instigation of Howard Kingsley Love. Without Bob picking up the threads, the reserve would never have got off the ground. He became its commanding officer, taking on the job with characteristic great enthusiasm. When war broke out in 1939, he became a signals officer, and during the war rose in rank to wing commander. After hostilities ended, Bob held the office of WIA Victorian Division President from 1947 to 1950. He was an analytic chemist, but his knowledge and technical ability with radio saw him more and more involved in the business side of audio and communications. Through the company R.H. Cunningham, he imported Eddystone receivers and was agent for a number of well-known brand names. A trip to Europe with his wife Kay resulted in his company obtaining the agency for the Geloso range of gear from Italy. This included the famous Geloso VFO, which was widely used by radio amateurs. R.H. Cunningham also served recording studios and broadcast stations with a range of microphones and headphones. He was highly regarded by the management of those overseas companies, which entrusted their representation in Australia to him. Through dedication and effort, Bob Cunningham founded the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club, and he was an active member of the RAOTC. He was also most anxious to assist anyone in need of a helping hand. In recent years, Bob provided assistance to the Kooyong Radio Club and was a source of encouragement for its blind members. Sharing his years of experience, the club benefited from advice on how to run its meetings and set policy, and he became a very vital and interested member of the club. Bob Cunningham demonstrated his specialist leadership capacity numerous times in serving his fellow radio amateurs. He was a person who wanted to be in front of things and make it happen. And thanks to Jim Linton, VK3PC, who unfortunately is also a Silent Key, and that item appeared in OTN back in February 1990. We now come to the end of our session for this month, and we hope you've enjoyed what we've presented to you. Now, in keeping with custom, here is our joke for this month. And I'd like to say thank you to a lot of you who have forwarded jokes to me. I now have quite a supply, so at the moment, we don't need any more. Thank you. This joke has been around a little bit in a different form, so I hope you enjoy it. A man in a hot air balloon realised he was lost. He reduced altitude and spotted a woman below. He descended a bit more and shouted, "Excuse me, can you help me? I promised a friend I would meet him an hour ago, but I don't know where I am." The woman below replied, "You're in a hot air balloon hovering approximately 30 feet above the ground. You're between 59 and 60 degrees north latitude and between 107 and 108 degrees west longitude." "You must be an engineer," said the balloonist. "I am," replied the woman. "How did you know?" "Well," answered the balloonist, "everything you told me is technically correct, but I've no idea what to make of your information, and the fact is I'm still lost. Frankly, you've not been much help at all. If anything, you've delayed my trip." The woman below responded, "You must be a politician." "I am," replied the balloonist. "How did you know?" "Well," said the woman, "you don't know where you are or where you are going. You have risen to where you are due largely to a quantity of hot air. You made a promise which you have no idea how to keep, and you expect people beneath you to solve your problems. The fact is, you are in exactly the same position you were before we met, but now, somehow, it's my fault." This now concludes our session for the month. All being well, we shall be back with you on Monday, the 3rd of August, 2020. And a reminder, if you want to contact us, please do so via our website, which is www.raotc.org.au. Now, we're just having another little item here, and I'm going to give you a phone number shortly, so if you wouldn't mind grabbing a pen and paper. Many items of historical interest are available on the RAOTC OTN on disk, which may be purchased for the small sum of $15. Details are on our website, but I know a number of listeners are of the old school and don't have email facilities, in which case you can contact me on, now if you write this down, 0418 386 030. That number, 0418 386 030. Also, if you would like to join the RAOTC, you can obtain a restricted membership if you have held an amateur radio license for at least 10 years, and full membership after 25 years. Annual membership fees are only $18. It is a very worthwhile investment. This is VK3OTN. We're saying 73 and listening now for any check-in and callbacks for those relay stations that have an operator available. Thank you and stay safe.